And welcome back to another episode on the Symptom Wisdom Show. This episode is about the lonely healing journey and how to befriend your symptoms instead of resenting them. And so this whole episode really was prompted by a follower who shared with me their frustration and grief in, and I quote, having to start over in life. You know, having to give up certain things, having to change things. They mentioned career changes, sacrifices, relationship endings, or being unable to be as social as they want due to the illnesses, due to the symptoms. And that led to some discussion on my stories where I offered some insight. And there was just so many of you resonating and wanting more on that. So that's what we're going to dive into in this episode. So first, I just want to really acknowledge that lonely healing journey and the validity of the symptoms or the illness or the diagnosis as the perpetrator in this stage of our process, right? All the ways they are taking, all the ways they are debilitating, all the ways we are just struggling to make it through. And this is the phase or stage really of symptom management. It's of, okay, how can I practice self-care? How can I begin to make some changes in my life, albeit begrudgingly, because my body is screaming at me and I can't go on like this anymore. And I can't do the things I want anymore. And I can't behave in the same ways that I did that led to me getting ill. Or that created the circumstances or the depletion or the repetition of childhood woundings that have me here. And so, what I'm not going to like gaslight over at all, ever. Is the truth in that, the pain in that, and it brings me back to my life. Let's go back to which area? Let we could go to my fulfilling English teaching career that had me traveling around the world in my 20s. This is not prior to becoming ill. I was very much feel ill and do it anyway type of gal. Dosed up on medication to make it through, you know, but I did have to do things differently. I did have to say no to certain engagements or things because my back was in agony or the brain fog was too much, or I had to just I had to call in sick sometimes, or I didn't fully go after my, you know, what I could have been able to go after if I had not been sick, let's say with my little travel blog at the time. I had all kinds of dreams with that that were really on the back burner when I had enough energy, when I was feeling like it, when I could be bothered. Or later on in my process, I was a full-time yoga teacher. And that really could have been my career, but in that stage of my life, the symptoms prevented me. I physically couldn't teach as many classes as I wanted to. It was a lot for me to demonstrate positions and use my voice and travel from like one venue to another and all of these kinds of things. And so there was definitely this bubbling resentment because if my body could just be healthy, I wouldn't have to experience all of this. If my body wasn't so broken, if my body wasn't so autoimmune, if my body wasn't so weak, if this wasn't my lot in life, if this wasn't my genetics, if this isn't the, even if I, when I started to get into spirituality and philosophy, it could still be resenting the idea that my soul chose this life path and all that I have to miss out on while I go through my healing process. And so this is really speaking to the part of us I like to call the victim girl. And also, there's definitely some sick girl in there as well. And let me talk about them a little bit. So, these are parts of us that I do not judge at all. They are very young in nature. They are not the full version of ourselves. They are just parts of ourselves. They are unintegrated, which means they have a voice and a wisdom to share that we haven't fully accepted. We were taught to reject the part of us that's sick. And sick girls are a much, she's the one who always seems to have one thing after another. She can obsess over symptoms in order to get to try to be seen and get her core needs met, to be seen, to be cared for. Sick girl feels like a burden, and sick girl feels that she's a bit of a waste of space, to be honest. She's not, but that's what's going on for her. So she lives within us. And victim girl is similar to sick girl. She may use the circumstance of sickness to be the victim. And she's also saying, she's screaming to please be released from her prison of victimhood. She wants to be free of it. But the symptoms, in this case, the symptoms are the perpetrator. The symptoms are the lock on her prison door. And maybe there's some resignation, especially when we've been brainwashed by the process in getting diagnosed in the first place, or by professionals who told us that there is nothing wrong. Victim girl is here to say there is something wrong. What happened to me? What happened to me is the thing that was wrong. Maybe that's what happened to me in childhood. Maybe that's what happened to me in my adolescence, in my early adulthood. Pain. This pain is not okay. This pain is what is wrong. And then with that emotion, we can get into some of these other parts I like to talk about, like outraged girl, entitled girl, but we'll go into them in other episodes. So that's okay that we have these parts. That's okay that there are these deep feelings of, what about me? When is it going to be my turn? And this feeling of being so lonely in this process of being at the beck and call of the symptom. The symptom is the one who is dictating. The symptom or the illness or the diagnosis is the one that's saying, now you have enough energy, now you can do XYZ. You know, it feels like we lose our control because we're not in control. And that's a very scary place to be. So, on this note, I want to talk a bit about handling that, processing that, holding that, and giving some space, voice, breath, movement, sound, energy, reparenting cherished quality time to this because it's really important. We're not going to move on to the next part without doing this. So, what does it mean to be with that loneliness or to be with that resentment or to just acknowledge the sacrifices that we're making? Well, it's doing exactly that. It's acknowledging it. telling the other part of ourselves that wants to positive, what's it, toxic positivity vomit all over it, or doesn't want to go there, doesn't want to go. See, that's the interesting thing with these parts like victim girl and sick girl, because they're not fully embodied, meaning they're not fully accepted. We probably don't want to go too much into it. So we'll say, like, oh, it's so lonely. I've got to sacrifice all of this stuff. That's shitty, but it's the way life is. And then we carry on. We don't really go what I like to call full victim, fully into the depth of the pain of it. And that is what we get to do. We can carve out a little space, a little time that could be daily if we're someone who really struggles to feel emotions. Sometimes it's just in one big go, one huge release. And sometimes it's coming back to it again and again because there's always new layers to unfold. You know, I've done significant work on my victim girl, integrating her, loving her, befriending her, and she still has a voice. Like, we're never going to get rid of these parts because here's the key kind of point that I want to make today. It's that these parts are intelligent, they're really wise, and they are somewhat immature in their growth and development. That's why they're unintegrated and they're not fully embodied. And as we go on this journey from girl to woman, from diagnosed to healer, from fix it mentality to I'm whole, I'm okay, I'm worthy, we get to mature these parts, and that's not by rejecting them further. So, going full victim, and that's a process I teach inside Embodied Symptom Wisdom if you want guidance in that. Another point on handling this loneliness in this stage is, well, there's a few things. One point I want to make is, can we get open to this perspective that the symptoms, so right now the symptoms are very much the gatekeeper, they are the perpetrator, they are making me do all kinds of things to sacrifice for them, which feels really inconvenient and irritating for me. But what if those symptoms were my friends? What if those symptoms were me when I was 5 years old, 7 years old? And what if my reaction to their knocking at the door in their fatigue or their brain fog or their pain or the bloating, and my reaction to them is exactly the same reaction my caregivers had with me growing up, and I've just adopted that voice. So now, when my back hurts, I say, God, what an inconvenience. Now I can't do this or that. God, Sarah, like, Jesus, do you ever give me a break? Wow, is that one of the voices that I heard growing up? And am I just replicating that? What if I could use this opportunity to hear the symptom, to give that younger part of me what she did not get, which is, oh, hello there. I see you. Have you got something to say? Do you want to talk? What do you need right now? And what if I could get to a place where I can listen to what's coming through? And if that symptom is saying, yeah, like, I really don't like this relationship that we're in. It feels icky. I don't like this work that you are making us do. I know it's money, or I know that it's what you've studied and it's like logical, but I'm not logical. I'm a child and I don't like it. And I'm here to tell you that, right? So when we start to listen to the truth of really just the truth of what we're living in, the truth that we maybe don't want to see, don't want to hear, don't want to face. The symptom is here to make us face it because it's so loud and it's pain. And there's only so long we can keep on ignoring. Now, let's take one of those examples. Let's take the relationship example. So let's say the symptom is saying, I'm really unhappy and unfulfilled in this relationship. Let's just go with an example. Let's say it's back pain. Let's say the relationship is very unsupportive. Let's say we're overfunctioning. We're giving way too much than we get, and we don't really know how to feel worthy of that support. We feel uncomfortable with trusting, with receiving. We're the type that's like, I got it. I got it. I'll do it. I'll do it. And our back is just in agony. So let's say we listen to the symptom and we hear the hard truth and we say, okay, you're right. Like this relationship is not at the standard that I deserve. And we leave that relationship. But now we are pissed off and resentful because now we're alone or we made these changes and we could feel like, look what everything I missed out on now. I did this for you, the symptom, my body, these inner parts, whatever resonates the most. I did this for you. And now, like it's even worse, maybe. Or now I'm lonely. And now, you caused this and this. And again, let's pause and notice, am I again talking to myself in the way that I was raised? And can I be with that? So can I make a decision like that and take full accountability and responsibility? So yeah, changing careers might lead to some financial strain and stress. Can I be with that? Changing relationships or ending them or setting really strict boundaries that mean that people have to exit your life or you move away from them. And it brings up stuff. It brings up stuff. It brings up our muchness. It brings up our not enoughness. It brings up other stresses and pains that maybe were not at the surface. Can I be a yes to that too? Knowing, or let's say, practicing trusting that the symptom knows what she's doing, that there is an intelligence within the body, that this symptom is a guider. A fairy godmother, crone-like, even though I also see her as very young, I also see her as so much more wise than we are. Like, because she can see the bigger picture, right? Because she's so honest. Like, I don't like this. I don't want this. It's so honest. And for many of us don't know how to be that honest. Or it's not really that we don't know how, it's that we are scared to be. So, of course, we might resent the symptom because it's able to do something that we're still practicing. And so, this initiation in grief, it's an interesting variation of grief because nobody is physically dying. And I'm speaking in the specific context of. We're moving through, okay, I'm diagnosed, okay, I'm giving up with kind of the constant testing and the medicating and the managing, and I'm moving now towards this healing journey. Or maybe I'm deep in this healing journey. And there's so much I have to let go of. There's so many endings. There's so much grief. And yeah, like let's just take a second to hold that. When my father died, I noticed that the people who could hold my grief. And by that, I mean, they didn't have to plaster over it. They didn't have to tell me that there's a lesson in it. They didn't have to tell me that they didn't have to make it about them and say, oh, their dad died too, or their cat, or their grandma, or whatever. They could just hold it. They could just say, wow, Sarah, you're going through a lot. I'm sending you love. I noticed that they were the people who were chronically sick and healing. They're the people who know grief, who can hold grief. Like, you are grief, or we are grief magicians in a way. We know how to alchemize grief. We fucking live the grief. But that doesn't have to be, that doesn't have to be something that we resent, actually, because I'm telling you, and I'm actually getting tears in my eyes. The love that I received from people who know grief made me feel so warm and so seen and so supported when I lost my father. And people who don't know that grief, who don't know the lonely healing journey, who don't know what it's like to resent their body or grieve the person that they had to lose, they really lacked a maturity, and like, they were not safe people. And if you're listening, you're probably someone healing chronic symptoms, and I want you to know that you are a safe person. Your embodiment of the grief that you've been through in losing the you that wasn't sick, or the you that became sick, and all the many yous along the way. Like, you have constantly died over and over and over again, and you've lost, and you've loved, and you've left things, and you have to move on from things. And yeah, you're just fucking superhero. Like, when I think back to me healing chronic symptoms, and one day you will be thinking back to this version of you healing chronic symptoms, it's so painful. And I'm not, what I'm saying is not taking away from that or trying to brush over that in any way, but it's also just so admirable. Like, I'm so proud that I know grief, and that chronic illness was my first initiation. So I'm wondering if we can move through the lonely healing journey, holding the pain, the very valid pain, and honoring what a fucking initiation, what a gift that cannot be learned in books. It cannot even be passed on from like learning about this in theory. This is your lived experience that you know grief, you know sacrifice. Now, what do you want to do with that? How do you want to alchemize that from being in victim girl and living in the pain of it to, okay, yes, I'm going to embrace this. Clearly, I'm being brought into this for a reason. I can resist it, and I can stay in resistance as long as I want. And that's also okay. We can be in resistance for as long as we need. Like, it's taken me a year since my dad died to be release some resistance to the fact that he died. And when I was chronically sick, I was in resistance to the idea that it wasn't incurable. I was in deep resistance to that for many years. Many years. So resistance is fine. And can I hold that resistance, and can I hold, what if this loneliness of being so misunderstood, of being so, just so alone with our body and the choices that we have to make, is in part a choice? What about that? What about this whole part where I started that it feels like we have no control and that we're managing the symptom? The symptom is like a dictator and a perpetrator. What if we can start to bring in some sense of control whereby we are listening to the symptom, but the symptom is not dictating in a way where we're saying, but I don't want to do that, but I'll do it for you. Just pause. Maybe like that's really significant pattern that we play out in our relationship. So definitely take note if we do that. You know, where else is this playing out where I'm begrudgingly tolerating and saying, okay, like, oh, I'm so lonely in this chronic illness process and healing, and it's not my choice. I'm so angry and it's not my choice. I'm so in grief and it's not my choice. If I could choose, I would be XYZ. Well, that's victim girl and that's totally okay. And can we start to bring in the parent in us, the mother in us, the goddess in us, the healer in us, the queen in us, the warrior in us, the one who stands up straight, the one with a big loving heart, the one who says, look, you're choosing this. And then we look at ourselves in the mirror and we see how our life is in part our choice. That is not the same as saying it's our fault, because I don't believe choice is related to fault. I can see how I chose partners or jobs or situations based on my programming. There's no shame around that. I can see how the loneliness, especially in 2019, where I was bedbound, was in part a choice. There was a choice there. There was the symptoms being the perpetrator and me being totally resenting and just like victimized by the situation. But the choice in that was I chose to quit work. I chose to be cared for full time by my partner and his family. I chose to live on a tiny island in the middle of nowhere where no one spoke my language. I chose certain situations where I was alienated and lonely more and more and more. And it validated back to me my own beliefs, like, you know, I'm alone, or I have to be dependent on this person, or I'm incapable by myself, or, you know, I don't get to have a village. I don't get to have people who see me. And I just kind of be invisible. I felt a bit like a princess in a tower, to be honest. On one hand, there was so much healing and being cared for by my partner at the time. And there was also a lot of subconscious choice making of just like, oh, I see, I'm outsourcing a lot of stuff here because I don't have to reparent myself. I don't have to love myself. I don't have to kind of develop some undeveloped parts of me, like the part of me that was terrible with money, the part of me that had issues with discipline or spontaneity or creativity. Like, I didn't have to nurture any of that. But then I was lonely. But then the loneliness was safe because I could just do my own thing. I could sleep until 2 p.m. and no one said anything. So, am I open to seeing how there is somewhat of a my own choice in the creation of my life? And if we're not there, super triggered by it, that is also okay. We can use a sieve here and we can sieve out whatever is not there yet or not true for us and leave it at that. And we can say, none of this is my choice. I'm doing the best I can and that's enough. Great. And if we can get comfortable with maybe there is some sense of choosing here, what does that teach me? What does that make me feel? because I'm from one person who healed to another person, I had to develop the self-belief and confidence in my core, in my backbone, that said, I'm not a hopeless victim to circumstance or luck. I do get to choose things. I do get to create matter out of nothing. I do get to choose. I do get some kind of personal power, because I did not when I was a child. I did not have any personal power. And making this choice that maybe chronic illness had something to do with me and my choices for survival and getting my needs met was pivotal in my process. Okay, so another part on being so lonely in this process is that what can happen for many of us is as we go along the journey, we become the self-healer girl. And I'm gonna devote a whole episode to her because she's so fascinating to me. And I think I've only recently kind of come out of her for the last few years. And so self-healer girl is very lone wolfy, and she has, realized or decided that, yeah, there is a lot of her own choice in this situation, and now she's choosing to self-heal. But there's a lot of loneliness in that too, because it's very much a form of the independent, and I by independent I mean hyper independent, boss babying kind of scarcity, kind of root chakra, like I'm thinking hairs on end, like I'm thinking like, oh my God, like another thing for me to fix. I need to figure it out. Like I need to do it. It's on me. So when we're talking about realizing our responsibility in our health and our symptoms and our life that we've created or that we've chosen to a degree, there is a shadow to that. And that shadow, so victim girl's on one end of the spectrum, and self-healer girl is actually on the other. And while victim girl might not take any blame, or she might take all the blame, depending on which energy of shame she's in and guilt, self-healer girl is very similar, but she's fixated on how she can fix it, and usually by herself. Usually by herself. So her question would be, okay, what book can I read? Okay, I'm listening to the podcast. I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I'm learning. I'm trying. It's still so lonely. My symptoms are still the perpetrator, because now I'm not chronically sick. I'm chronically healing. Yeah. So, are you chronically healing? For that, I say seek counsel. Now, self-healer girl will say, okay, which professional should I hire? Which do I need a team? Do I need a doctor? Do I need to reevaluate the mold in my house? Like, do I need to change my diet? That's not what I mean. That's not what I mean. When I use that term counsel, I'm referring to wise women, especially if, and I'm speaking to women here. So positioning yourself around other wise women who are vulnerable, who are learning, who are sharing their initiations with you, who have also been through grief and know grief. And the best counsel you can put yourself in is one where there's different levels, or levels not really the word I want to use, but different. So from girl to woman, from sick to healer, there are so many stages and initiations along the way. And being in a group where they're all there, Some have healed chronic illness, but now, or and now, something else is going on. Like me, my dad died, for fuck's sake. Like, to think that we heal chronic illness and then it's all rainbows after that. No, like, chronic illness is one part of life, but man, there is a whole other part of life. You know? What I mean is, don't put your victim girl in a group full of other victim girls, unless they are victim girls doing the work. But those kind of Facebook support groups of like spoonies who live at Spoonies, one was called Spoonies Trapped in Their Home. Like, that's actually a Facebook group I was part of. Spoonies Trapped in Their Home. So that was not that wise kind of maternal council of healers that my soul was yearning for. And I actually went on to create that council myself in the online world because I wasn't really finding it online, but I did find it, of course, when I moved to Bali. And every second person I meet was like, oh, yeah, I had fibromyalgia. Oh, yeah, I had chronic fatigue for like 3 years. And I was noticing that some of these women made their life around that. Now they were the chronic fatigue coach, or now they were a woman's embodiment coach, et cetera, et cetera. But some of them, it was just a stage in their life. And they're like, yeah, I had like Hashimoto's, or I had, you know, this or that. There was one guy I met who had oh, what was it? Some kind of hypermobility thing. There's a ton of people who've had Lyme. Like, I'm just constantly meeting them all the time. And they're like, oh yeah, that was that like thing I had. And then it's very different to the me in 2019 who was bedbound and so isolated from all of that, in part by choice. Because maybe my capacity just wasn't there. Like, I just couldn't handle that. I could just handle like getting through the day. And so notice where you are with that. And if you're saying, well, where is this council? It's often right under our noses. I mean, I certainly have a council that you can join. In embodied symptom wisdom, but otherwise, go to a woman's circle, go howl under the full moon and find another woman to go howl with, go burn some shit in a fire, shit that you want to let go of, and invite your partner or your mom or whoever and say, let's burn some shit. So, what I'm saying is, yeah, it probably will rest on you kind of bringing that forward if you're noticing that you just don't have any of that energy around you at all. As they say, you know, we become the what we want to attract in. We become that. We be that, which is, of course, embodiment. My last point, bit of a personal share. This very valid loneliness and resentment that we're experiencing with making sacrifices for the symptom. As we start to do the deep work, the inner work, the internal work, these sacrifices become, they alchemize into the best goddamn choices we ever made in our whole life. And I know that now it might not seem like that. Now it might seem like that was my dream job and I had to quit it because of the illness, or I had this opportunity to travel the world and I had to say no because of the chronic fatigue. Like, so I know now it's just, it makes you want to crawl on the floor and curl up and cry and do that, my darling. Do that. Do it. Like, I did it. Right? Months, months, months. Grieving, grieving. Letting all that anger be there. And what I want to share with you, and what I would love for you to feel into, if it's there, is how could some of these choices be the best? Or do I have any kind of proof, any kind of lived experience in a symptom guiding me to the best fucking thing I ever did. And I'll give you some of my examples. I quit university twice. The first time I quit, I had, it was verging more on mental health issues with self-harming and suicide. But I mean, not, I never attempted suicide, but I was very depressed and just like did not want to be there at all in like life. And of course, my body manifested that in symptoms. So I quit university the first time. And then I ended up going back after a year off and I quit a second time. And thank God that I did because I don't know where I'd be otherwise. But depending on my personal opinions and my conditioning on that, I could hold a lot of shame around the fact that I didn't graduate or that, quote, the symptoms made me start over in life. They forced me, like I lost that. Whereas now my perspective is like, just thank God, because after I quit and I also quit other people's expectations and what I thought I was supposed to do. And around that time, I also started waking up to how university is like a system, and so is the medical industry complex. And like I had all these epiphanies at that time. So I'm very grateful. I remember when said partner from 2019, 2020, we were together for about 3 years. I remember when he broke up with me, and you know, in part, it was because I was sick. He tried his best with me. He really did. And like, I honor him so much for trying to love me to health. You know what I mean? But I had to learn that that doesn't work. That doesn't work. And I remember I went back to the UK to get a bit of money because I'd really run out, exhausted all of my options. And I became a full-time carer for a lady with dementia. And that lady, like, she was really advanced in her dementia. So I remember having a cry, just like a gentle kind of cry, you know, the one where the tears just fall from your eyes and you're looking into nothingness. And she was like, she said, "Oh, is he gone?" And like, she would often say random things that didn't really make sense. And I used to make them make sense for me. And I'd say to her, "Yeah, he's gone, you know." And then I'd have a cry and I'd be like, "He broke up with me." And, you know, she'd kind of be like, "Oh, they're there." And then 2 seconds later, she's sort of forgotten what we're talking about and we're moving on to something else. And that was very heartwarming because I didn't really have anybody to tell. I didn't really have anyone to support me through that. And I lived at her house and I was there for like 6 weeks without a break. So a lot of that was just pushing through and being with my sadness in the moments that I could be. But then, thank God, because then the pandemic hit and it became very apparent that me and him had very different opinions on that. And while he was lining up to get, injected, I was, you know, figuring out how to flee the country and how to keep myself sovereign and move away from that and move towards my dream of living off grid and not being like controlled by governments. And I won't get crazy into that, but it highlighted to me like another one of those thank God moments, like thank God that that relationship ended so I can be more of who I truly am. Because here's the thing. The you that's sick is not who you truly are, right? It's a strategy. It's patterns of survival. It's conditioning and it's the younger parts of us that need stuff, like they need things to be met, and it's not being met in life. It's not being met in life. So we need the symptom to try to meet it for us. And then we carry on living a life that does not meet our needs, dependent on the symptom to try to, like, in this really, imagine like a really like messy squiggle. Like it's a really difficult uphill battle and goes round and round and round and round and round, but it kind of somewhat gets the need met. And my final point to you is that we don't have to have that squiggle. We don't have to keep living a life that doesn't meet our needs and rely on a symptom to do that for us. Because if we take the example of that relationship, I needed the symptom to feel that love and care because I didn't have that for myself. I couldn't love myself when I was sick. I had so much shame around myself, but he could love me for me, but that doesn't really work. But now I need the symptom in order to get that need met, because if I don't have that symptom anymore, like I couldn't not have the symptom if I hadn't yet embodied true self-love and true self-acceptance. So thank God that that ended. And yeah, I quit careers. I moved across the country. I healed a load of money stuff. I never thought, went back in those days, the 2010 to 2020, I did not imagine earning more than minimum wage. Like, I was a minimum wage girlie. I grew up in a lot of poverty. The fact that I'm here today with my own business is a testament to this work, because this work is not only about healing our body, we're healing our life. Because our body is just one way, one place where our stuff shows up. It also shows up in our bank account and it shows up in our relationships. And yeah, like, here's another one where it has two varying perspectives. Now I get to choose my hours, right? Because I own my own business. So I get to choose my hours. If I want to start a session at 10 a.m. or 7 a.m., or I don't want to start work until 5 p.m., that's my choice. But let's, and that's empowering, right? And it's not my choice because I'm sick. It's just my choice because I want to. But let's take that same choice, choosing my own hours, and let's put it to the me that was sick and healing, but she didn't know she was healing. And I said, oh, I can't work until, like, I can't work in the mornings because I'm sick. The symptoms force me. I can't go out in the evening because of the symptoms. But now I might say, I don't want to go out in the evening because my evenings are sacred to me and I love being in bed by 9, not because I'm sick, because I want to. So even with that, the difference is not really in the external, like the thing itself. The choosing one's hours. The difference is in what, where I'm able to say, like, I just want that. I just like that. Like, that's just my standard, or that's just my, that's just my, like, that's me being me. That's me doing me. That's me being happy. And I wonder if those of us on this lonely healing journey, we're learning. And we're being initiated into our pleasure, into our, I just don't want to work in the mornings, or I don't want to work in an office, or I don't want that kind of relationship, or I don't want to still live at home, or I don't want to move out because I'm scared of, like, whatever we're scared of, whatever. But can we start to just do a little cord cutting process of, because I'm sick, because of the symptoms. Because that's sick girl, that's victim girl. The queen in you, the healer in you, doesn't behave that way, right? She doesn't use symptoms. She doesn't need to rely on symptoms to get her needs met or to live her life. So can you, for this week, or however much you want, but for a little accountability, let's say this week, move forwards with, it's not because I'm sick, it's because I want to, or it's because I don't want to. So we're starting to heal some of that resentment of, sorry, I can't come, I would have loved to, but I've got a headache and I can't. and now I feel guilty and I hate my body, right? We're starting to bring in some breath and some sense of control and choice and autonomy and responsibility and backbone. Like, even as I'm saying this, my spine starts to straighten and my chest starts to open because, oh, hey, love, thank you for inviting me. Actually, it just doesn't work for me. I don't want to. Like, I want to do this instead. I want to take a hot bath. I don't want to go out. And notice, this is going into kind of a different topic here, but notice if that person screams at you or tries to guilt you, and then you have to kind of resort to symptom talk because it's the only way they leave you alone. And just notice, ah, the symptom really protects me. Like, no wonder I have this symptom because I need it, because I don't have, or I don't want to say I don't have. I'm still learning how to embody my backbone. I'm still learning how to embody my voice. I'm still learning how to say no and yes. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. There's really so much I can say about this, and I will continue to teach on this more and the points that we've touched on. If you are looking for some next steps, go ahead and join the waitlist for my upcoming workshop. You can do so by finding me on Instagram at the Sarah Kimberly. It's going to be a very interactive workshop. It's going to get you really moving through some of the stuff we've been talking about with victim girl, sick girl, and that resentment and our say a fear around really embodying our yes and our no. And if you are looking for something more structured, more long-term, more supportive, with more ongoing guidance, go ahead and take a look at Embodied Symptom Wisdom. Depending on when you're listening, you can either apply now to join at Early Bird, or maybe you're listening later in the year and you can join for our next cohort and secure your place. Goodbye for now, my loves.